Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Rico Brown, y'all, let the chant begin. Rico Brown, y'all, let's hear it again. Rico Brown, y'all, this show's on fire. With Evan Roberts, we're taking it higher. Rico Brown, y'all.
Welcome to Rico Brown. And here's the reason we tried a new theme song today. Not because I was playing with AI all weekend long, but anything to change the vibes of the dog crap that we have sat through for the majority of this season. Welcome to a therapy session. Welcome to a vent session. Welcome to Rico Bronya. We have entered Panic City, episode number 529. As the Mets get swept by the Milwaukee Brewers, they don't just get swept by the Milwaukee Brewers. Because being swept by the Brewers, if I would have told you that on Friday afternoon, you would have said, wow, that sucks. Seven straight losses, not good. But if I told you how, if I described in painful detail how the sweep would go down, you would say I'm a masochist. And I thought game one was bad. We did an instant reaction, Rico, after that thing was done on the walk-off outfield assist. I thought game two was bad. Hoff and I talked each other out of doing instant reaction. I can't believe the way they lost that edition, Rico Bronya. But the one on Sunday, the one that stuck the broom straight up our asses, was one of those losses that, unless you're just naive, you saw coming the entire time. The entire time, it was like waiting for the punch in the face. You were waiting for it. You weren't sure how it was going to happen, but you knew, even with a 5-0 lead, that this was going to go bad, because that's the way this team has been playing. Where if it's the offense actually scoring a bunch of runs, which they did early, they went to sleep late in the game, what would be the Met offense without that, then it would be something else. Would it be the defense, like we saw on Saturday? Would it be the bullpen, which it turned out to be? What would it be that would hand us as Met fans yet another absolute brutal loss? And the answer truly is everything. Everything sucked in Sunday's game. Now, what's the biggest problem? I mean, I could harp on the offense, which I've done a million times. They did score early. Juan Soto had a big game, had the clutch hit early. Jeff McNeil had a clutch hit early. We even saw Cedric Mullins actually contribute. Brett Beatty hit a home run. Like, Pete Alonso came up with a clutch RBI double. So they hit early. They didn't hit from the sixth inning on, which is not uncommon. But the continuous reliance on this bullpen, as good as I still think it is, despite it crap in the bed today, continues to be a problem. Nobody goes deep into games. And you could tell this is why, not that I was sitting here waiting to be negative, because I really wasn't. I wanted a victory. I wanted to come here and do a Rico Bronya talking about, hey, they salvaged the last game against Milwaukee. Maybe this turns everything around. But you could sense with Sean Manaea's pitch count early in this game, even though he got through some trouble, like in the first inning, worked around the one-out double or the leadoff double to Caleb Durbin, worked around a two-out walk in the second inning, worked through a little bit of trouble in the third inning. You could tell. Actually, he didn't even run into trouble in the third inning. He had a 1-2-3 third inning, but his pitch count was starting to add up. And then he gives up the home run to William Contreras with a 5-0 lead. And I try to calm myself down by saying, you know what? He's got a big lead. You got to come out. You got to attack the strike zone. And then we see Danny Jansen come through with a double. We see Joey Ortiz come through with what really turned out to be one of the more underrated big moments in this game before he would go later on to tie the game. The two-run hit that turns a 5-1 game into a 5-3 game. Because think about what you're thinking about or what's going through your mind in the bottom of the fourth inning. It's 5-1. That's the good news. The bad news is Sean Manaea has thrown 1,000 pitches. And because he's thrown 1,000 pitches, you know he's not going deep in this game. And you know it's going to be another day where you're just going to rely on this bullpen. Eventually, it ain't going to work. But if Manaea could have gotten Ortiz to end the fourth inning, and at that point it would have been 4 innings, 1 run, I was even thinking about taking him out after 4. Obviously, Mendy wasn't going to do that because he actually let him start the 5th. But he gives up the 2-run hit to Joey Ortiz, and I thought that was such an underratedly big moment in the game because it turned a comfortable lead, which at 5-1 you still sort of had, into, oh, geez, we have a game against this pain-in-the-ass team in which you know they're going to have to overly rely on their bullpen. And then we began the process of me trying to count the outs. I even tweeted this out. I was at a barbecue today. Some of you may have heard me talking about this on Friday, that I went to a barbecue with diehard Met fans. So I did not have the opportunity to DVR the game because they're Met fans. The game was going to be on outside. I went there last year, similar circumstances, had a great time. Mets won that game. It was, I remember it for two very weird reasons. One is serious. The other one is comical, like baseball. The Mets beat the Rockies that day, but it was also the day of the assassination attempt on President Trump. And we're at this barbecue. They got the Met game on. Obviously, we're all talking about what the hell went down with the assassination attempt. And I watched the game, and I was like, all right, I can get through watching the game without scoring it. Not used to it, but I got through it. So I had some fun on the air earlier this week talking about, will I score it this time? For anyone who cares, I did not score the game. And it's a good decision I didn't, because my youngest kid was running around like a crazy guy. So I was consuming the game half while watching it at a barbecue with a TV on and half with my freaking phone. So it was horrific. I mean, it wasn't horrific, the barbecue. The result of the Met game was horrific. Because when it's 5-3 after the Ortiz hit, and tell me if you're not thinking along with me on this, I'm analyzing, how do they get 27 outs? I know the offense is going to go LD. Like, I know that. I was actually surprised when Pete hit the RBI double in the fifth inning that gave them the insurance. That was the response from the three-run rally. So it goes from 5-3 to 6-3 because Pete Alonso comes through with that big double, and I was almost stunned by that. I figured after the fourth inning, the offense wasn't going to do anything. And they had an opportunity to score more runs. They came up small. I think it was Cedric Mullins and Brett Beatty. No, Ronnie Mauricio and Cedric Mullins, who did not come through with big hits after that because Jeff McNeil drew a walk. They were set up to pile on even more. And you could sense that they were going to need that because they were going to ask so much from their bullpen. But in the fifth inning, as the Mets are tacking on the extra run, I'm done with Manaea. I'm going to be honest with you. That second guess or first guess number one on Mendoza, Manaea was done. I know we're all desperate for the Mets to get innings from their starting pitching, but he was done. So I'm sitting there as I'm pushing Spence on a swing, and I'm counting down the outs. Like, okay, how are they going to get to the 27 outs? They've gotten 12. To me, I'm done with Sean Manaea. And I'm thinking, all right, Reed Garrett should be available, even though he opened the previous game. Ryan Helsley should be available, and they're almost lucky that Mendy pulled him after the implosion, which I'll get to in a little bit. Trust me, we'll get to game two. We got this is going to be a long-ass Rico Bronya. Get the sleeping bag out. I want to read almost every bitching email from every Met fan. Like, this is going to be a full therapy session, so get comfortable, Hoff. Hopefully you don't have any boob bars to go to tonight, all right? Hopefully you cleared out the schedule. I actually forgot what they were called. That's why I called it a boob bar. I forgot.
Well, we go gentlemen's club in this household because I like to be PC.
My apologies. Gentlemen's club. I was about to call it something else, but I was really not PC. So we'll go with gentlemen's club.
By the way, we are now starting a new feature that below, if you're watching, in case you need to know what LD stands for, I give it to you.
Yes. If you're consuming this on YouTube, there is a graphic that says LD equals, and I'll do this one time on the podcast version. If you are a kid, close your ears for a second. LD stands for limp dick. I don't want to continue to say limp dick. So we've kind of, I'm trying to be clean. I'm making an attempt to be clean. And a part of that is Spence says to me last week, I watch you on TV. You say a lot of bad words. And I was like, whoa. Okay, I'm done. No more bad words.
Cut it off.
Our boss, Ryan Hurley's going to get his wish. Spence told me too many bad words. So LD means limp dick. So I'm counting down the outs. And I think we all are trying to figure out, all right, they have themselves this 6-3 lead. Shomanai has clearly got nothing left in the tank. How are they getting from the fifth inning to the ninth inning? And so the first thing on my mind was Edwin Diaz needs to be available for six outs. This is the perfect storm for Edwin Diaz to be available for six outs. Why, you ask? He hasn't pitched in days, and they have an off day on Monday. So if there is ever a moment in which you can go to your best reliever, go to your closer and say, hey, we are going to extend you more than we ever extend you, this would be the scenario. He is fresh as a daisy. You have an off day on Monday, and the Mets are a mess. So I'm already working backwards on, all right, Helsley should be available. I'll use him in an inning early. I figured Tyler Rogers would be available. I'll use him an inning early. I've really got my maneuvers and my ability to somehow get through the five innings of bullpen help I'm going to need because I could extend Edwin Diaz. So first mistake number one from this brilliant manager was even allowing Manaea to start the fifth inning. I'm sorry. You could tell me all day how, well, but they need innings from their starting pitching. Look, I agree they need innings from their starting pitching, not from guys that are done. It's like those who bitched about Clay Holmes coming out after 75 pitches last week. Why? He was going to get lit up if he came out for the sixth inning. So Manaea starting the bottom of the fifth inning and three pitches in giving up a leadoff hit to Isaac Collins was the least stunning thing that could have happened. He then goes to Reed Garrett, which I can't even complain about. I know he had pitched the day before as the opener and did a great job. The problem is, and Reed Garrett's been mostly good, I'll give him that. He threw a cutter in the middle of the plate to William Contreras, and he didn't miss it. And it sucked. And that was the other kind of underrated moment in this game in which you knew, oh, my, they're not winning this game. Not getting Joey Ortiz out with two outs in the fourth inning with a chance to keep it 5-1, and Contreras with nobody out in the fifth inning, instantly turning this in to a close game. Now, credit to Reed Garrett. He did a great job getting through the fifth inning after he gave up the home run to William Contreras. Credit to Brooks Raley. He comes in, he pitches a 1-2-3 inning in the sixth inning. Tyler Rogers comes in, and I thought in a lot of ways was really impressive because the base hit he gave up to Anthony Siegler to start the inning was another soft contact base hit, which has sort of been the problem for Tyler Rogers. He gives up the base hit to William Contreras that I thought maybe it was the glare of me watching on the phone. I thought Ronnie Mauricio was going to pick and turn into a double play. But credit to Tyler Rogers because he's in a horrible, horrible spot. First and third, seventh inning, tying run on third, and somehow gets Andrew Vaughn to turn into a double play. So clutch relief pitching by Tyler Rogers. By the way, as this is all happening, the Met offense is doing nothing and not even threatening. And I know that people don't want to hear me bitch about them at offense when they lose a game 7-6 and they blow a game because their starters can't go deep into a game and their high leverage relievers fell on the face. I get that. But I do want to point out that the Met offense was allowed to tack on in the 6th, the 7th, the 8th, and dare I say regain the lead in the 9th. They did not even show a pulse in doing so. We get to the bottom of the 8th inning. Would I have flat out gone to Edwin Diaz? I would have considered it. I was thinking about it. 6 outs, go get the job done. But if you're going to go to Ryan Helsley, who, remember, the night before gives up a base hit to Isaac Collins on a play that Ronnie Mauricio should have made. We'll spend more time on that coming up. And then after what should have been the final out of the inning gets called a pitch clock violation, he still gives up a home run to William Contreras. So Helsley's coming off a game in which he didn't throw a lot of pitches, but he wasn't dominant. He wasn't really effective. And so far, when you look at Helsley's time here, not that he's been a disaster, but it's not like he's been lights out dominant. He's not. So I get what he's done in St. Louis. I get how excited we were about acquiring him. But this is not about a non-confidence in Helsley more than it is a full confidence in Edwin Diaz, who's had a great year. So call me crazy. The best closer in baseball is Edwin Diaz. Ryan Helsley before the trade, top 10, but not Edwin Diaz. So me thinking or preferring going to Edwin Diaz in the 8th inning, I don't think it's crazy. And it's not a non-confidence in Helsley. But all right, you go to Ryan Helsley to start the 8th inning, fine. When he issues a leadoff walk to Bryce Terang, I got Diaz warming up, which, to Mendy's credit, he did. I think it was at this point, or maybe it was another batter later, we had Diaz warming up, because at that point with a one-run lead, I know I got to deal with the three-batter minimum, but I got to be ready to go to my closer. Helsley already put the leadoff guy on, which can't happen. And by the way, what a pain in the ass Bryce Terang is. I mean, you talk about an absolute Met killer. Oh, my God. He's right up there on the list. That'll be an offseason Rico, ranking the Met killers, the underrated Met killers. And here's the sad part. We may be able to do that offseason Rico on October 10th, the way things are going. Anyhow, Helsley gets Frelick to pop up. Okay, great. One out, one on. You can't make a move anyway with the three-batter minimum. Once Danny Jansen, who, remember, stuck it to the Mets earlier this season, once Danny Jansen gets a base hit, and now the Brewers are set up with two on and one out, where the hell is Edwin Diaz? Where is he? And for those that didn't hear this, I believe in pain. I'm a masochist, but I also want to have answers when we do the Rico Bronya. Because a lot of times as a fan, especially before I was doing this, the talk radio thing, the Rico Bronya thing, I would never listen to post games on the ride home with my dad. He'd put on 60s music. We did not want to hear what the manager had to say because we're pissed that they lost. But I get it. It's different now. We do a podcast, do a talk show. I got to hear what the manager says. So I went back on YouTube. I said, all right, Mendy, were you considering Edwin Diaz? Thankfully, one of the reporters asked, are you ready for his reasoning why he didn't want to go to Diaz to face Brandon Lockridge with first and second and one out? You ready for this reason? He said, the double steal. You know, guys run on Edwin Diaz. All of a sudden, you steal on him. Now they're second and third, one out. Now the Brewers are a base hit from taking the lead. A couple of things. I agree that Edwin Diaz is someone you can run on. I do. The guy on first, and that's the lead run, runner on second, you're right. Bryce Terang could steal third base. Now, most of the issues against Diaz are stealing second, more so than stealing third, but okay, I get it. Less than two outs, Terang steals third. Now the Brewers could be contact away from tying the game. But the lead runner is Danny Jansen, who is not pinch run for. So Danny Jansen's out there. He's the base runner. He's the lead run. You know how many stolen bases Danny Jansen has in his major league career? One. He's not exactly a threat to steal. And to me, that's overthinking it. Put your best pitcher out there. Like, what really pisses me off about this game, and I know it's more than one move that has led to the disarray the Mets are in right now, the dumpster fire that the Mets are in right now, but what really annoys me is when you give up a lead before your best pitcher even has a chance. Now, I get what Edwin Diaz would end up doing. We all know he gave up a walk-off home run to send us all home miserable. Now, I don't know if that happens if you bring him in the eighth inning before the lead is given up. I don't know if he gives up the lead. But he wasn't given that opportunity because Ryan Helsley was allowed to face Brandon Lockridge, who he struck out. Oh, great. But then he's allowed to face Joey Ortiz, that pain in the ass who had a big hit earlier in the game, and he takes a 100-mile-per-hour fastball. And we know Helsley, he'll dial it up to 100 like it freaking matters. Hit 104 on Saturday. How good did that? What'd that do? And Helsley gives up the killer hit to Joey Ortiz. On a ball where I can't say Pete should have made the play. He could have made the play. It would have been a nice play. I wonder about the alignment. I wonder about where Pete was set up, especially when you got Helsley gassing it out 101 miles an hour and you figure Ortiz is not getting around on it. So I thought Alonso probably should have been playing more towards the line. It was not an easy play. It's a typical play that's not made by a team that's lost 500 games in a row. That's the way I'd look at it. But I was pissed, and I still am, that Diaz was not in this game prior to the lead being given up. He's warming up for a reason. He's warming up to come in the eighth inning. So my first guess was not that I would have taken out Helsley after he struck out Lockridge. It was that I would have taken out Helsley after Jansen got the base hit. With two on and one out and Lockridge up, my attitude would have been, sure, there's a better chance you can run on Edwin Diaz, at least the runner on second will, not the guy on first and Danny Jansen, who has one career stolen base. But I'm going to take my chance, and Edwin's just going to get these guys out. He's going to strike them out. He's going to get out of it. And instead, Ryan Helsley, I'm not burying this guy, but he's had some bad moments over the last few days. I mean, put it this way, he's not going to win it, spoiler alert, but Ryan Helsley's a candidate for the net negative of this series. But don't worry, he won't win it. It's pretty obvious who the net negative should be, which we will get to. But he goes to Edwin Diaz one batter too late. That's my problem. He gets Siegler out after he throws the wild pitch. But you knew this game was over. I mean, we all knew this game was cooked because this Met team, for whatever reason, and I know that a lot of Met fans like to use strong words like, they're heartless or they're gutless. I don't buy that personally. Now, Carlos Mendoza's made a very big deal about their lack of adjustments. And maybe that's the answer. That the reason this offense looks so bad late in games is that no one adjusts. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know the answer. And for most of us, we don't care what the answer is. We just know that they suck late in games. We just know that unlike when Armando Benitez blew game two against the Giants in the 2000 NLDS, when JT Snow danced and hit that home run, the Mets responded immediately. Not this Met team. I give you a more recent comparison because that's not fair. Last year, game 161, when they rallied against the Brave bullpen, not in the ninth inning, but in the eighth inning, and then they blew the lead, the Mets responded. Lindor hits the home run, as we all remember. Not this team. For whatever reason, I don't know the reason. Like I said, I don't even care the reason, but they never respond, or at least they rarely respond. And so when they came up in the ninth inning of what is still a tie game, because Edwin Diaz was able to get that huge third out, they went down so meekly. Juan Soto drew a walk. I give him credit for that. Two-out walk. I loved it. But Brandon Nimmo, who is a lost puppy dog, hits a lazy fly ball to left field. And you knew going into the bottom of the ninth inning that there was a choices here. And I'm at a barbecue in which my four-year-old's running around like crazy. Life choices. Put us out of our misery as opposed to letting us believe for the next 35 minutes. And thank you, Edwin Diaz, because instead of teasing us, instead of making us think, I wonder who will pitch the 10th. I wonder if the Met LD offense will do something in the 10th inning with a runner on second. I wonder if the Brewers will even face Pete Alonso. Instead of even attempting to answer all those questions, Edwin Diaz shook off a fastball, threw a slider that was right in the middle of the plate, and Isaac Collins became a name in Met history. Or at least he became a name that when we do the ranking of worst losses of the season, we're going to say, hey, remember that Isaac Collins? Yeah, he stuck it to him. You had Blake Perkins throwing a guy out at the plate. You had Bryce Terang being a pain in the ass. You had Joey Ortiz getting tons of clutch hits. And yes, you had Isaac Collins hitting a leadoff home run against Edwin Diaz. This was a collab effort. This was crap from everybody. I'll exonerate Juan Soto. He got on base a bunch of times. I'm not all about just picking on Juan Soto. Why not a good game? It's not all Juan Soto. But it's on a lot of other guys. It's on Francisco Lindor, who no-showed this series, with his glove, with his bat, with everything. It's on Brandon Nimmo, who's a strikeout machine. It's on every one of these starting pitchers who can't go deep into a game. It is on the manager for making questionable decisions. It's on this bullpen, which is being asked to do a lot. We all acknowledge that. And when you use five relievers, all it takes is one to crap the bed for the game to be a disaster. It's on the crappy defense. I mean, it's on everything. And I guess when you're bad, and the Mets are bad right now, they're a bad team. They've been a bad team for a while. And we could argue about that. But the reality is they haven't been good for a while. Their record is what their record is. And right now it's still above 500. It's still good enough to be a playoff team. But really, since May, they've been a mediocre team. And since mid-June, they've been a bad team. And I've said that for a while. It pains me to say. I don't want it to be true. I try to take a long time before my opinions change or formulate on a baseball season. Because baseball, man, it's a streaky sport. I get it. You're never as good as you are when you're hot. You're never as bad as you are when you're slumping. I know all the cliches. I try to live by them. This is not the first rodeo of this team playing bad, like really bad, for a few weeks stretch. They've done it twice. It's the second time they've had a stretch where they've lost seven in a row. The second time they've had a stretch in which they've lost 10 out of 11.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, the easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today. and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
I remember having fun with Hoff and Sal and BT when Hoff was asked on his midday show, hey, has a team ever gotten to a World Series when they've lost 10 out of 11? And he said, no, did some quick research. No one's ever done it. I did some research, found a bunch of teams. We all had fun about it. But now the question is, has anyone done it twice? Because this is a team now that's in a free fall for a second time. And the only thing I can tell you that can at least make you calm slightly is that I'm not sitting here on August 10th, 11th telling you the season's over. That's ridiculous. The season's not over. I'm not saying that. Could they make the playoffs still? They better. Can they get hot at the right time in the playoffs? Sure. I've always been a believer of that. So I'm not going to tell you, pack it up, don't watch the team anymore. They suck. It's over. This isn't like they're nine out of a playoff spot or six out of a playoff spot and free-falling. They're in a playoff spot. Now, that may not last much longer if they continue to lose. So I'm not giving up. I'm not telling you it's over. Baseball is a weird freaking game. And it's funny because I said this a lot last April and May when they were struggling. I'd rip the team for 45 minutes. We talk about how bad they are. And then I would remind everybody, you know, baseball can change on a dime. When you have it figured out, when you think a season is lost, everything changes. Now, we are going through the opposite this season. This looked like the best team in baseball in April. Like I've said, they've been mediocre since then. They've been a bad team since mid-June. That does not mean that is our death sentence. I want to make that very clear because I got a lot of emails that we're going to get to of people saying the season's over. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. And if you listen to the first half hour of this, Rico, and you somehow took all of my bitching about game three of this series into, well, I'm giving up on the season, I don't know what you're listening to. I and you, we all can be mad about this series and about the way they're playing. We all don't even have to have confidence that it's going to turn around. You know, what we give you confidence, it's going to turn around. But that doesn't mean that we just woke up yesterday because baseball is a weird sport where things change quickly. 2016, didn't go anywhere, but right around this time, mid-August of 2016, the Mets were under 500. They did not look like a playoff team. They went on an incredible run, and they made the playoffs. Is this team showing any sign of that? No. But they have the talent. But things need to change. Things need to change. Now, what can David Stearns do right now other than calling up young players? Not really anything. What can Carlos Mendoza do other than changing the lineup, which he's done a lot of? Not really anything. We've talked about firing Eric Chavez and Jeremy Barnes. Sure, you can give it a try. But this comes down to players who are mostly good playing better. And Sunday's game was just a collective debacle. Let me get to Saturday's game because I want to get all these debacles in order. We'll pick a Rico, I'm the Man Now star of the series. Somehow we will. We'll pick a net negative. And like I said, I do want to go through all your emails because there's a lot of angry people. In fact, before we get to recapping game two, let's have a little interlude, a little intermission of angry emails from Met fans. You guys like that? All right. Let's go to Nicholas, who writes, be honest, are we rooting for the Phillies or the Reds tomorrow? I think the honest answer to this question speaks volumes. So it's funny, the Phillies are playing the Reds Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And the Cincinnati Reds have cut into this lead because right now the New York Mets find themselves 5.5 games out of the division, which is a lot. It's the most it's been all year. And currently only a game and a half up on the Cincinnati Reds. 4 on the Giants, 4 on the Cardinals. I put a poll out, and I have not looked at the results yet. But before I give you the results of that poll, I will tell you right now, I can't believe I'm saying this. I got to root for the Phillies. Now, am I nuts for saying that, Hoff? Because the standings tell me, and the way this team is collapsing tells me, that we got to make the playoffs. And it's not giving up on the division more than it is saying, I got to make sure I make the playoffs first before I worry about the division.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else. The playoffs is numero uno. So if that means the team that's on our tail to make the playoffs, who are the Reds, you got to go for whoever's playing them. And then, unfortunately, right now it's the Phillies. And no, that hurts the division, but there is no division without the playoffs.
The results, and I put it on social media, are very close. 52% say let's go Phillies. 48% say let's go Reds. So a slight majority. It's not giving up on the division more than it is saying, hey, I got to make sure we're a playoff team before we worry about the division. The Mets still have 7 head-to-head games with Philadelphia and could very well take the tiebreaker since they're ahead on the tiebreak 4-2. But I got to tell you, I don't want to miss the playoffs. And that is the biggest disaster, and the Reds are right there now.
So for the next few days, Mets fans or Phillies?
Yes, unfortunately. Fred writes, call to action for the Met front office. Dear Evan, I'm a faithful listener to the Rico and your afternoon show with Tiki on the Fan. I truly respect your in-depth baseball knowledge. All right. Stop kissing ass. Let's get down to business. Let me start my call to action by saying I am a believer in David Stearns. After all, I read earlier this year from a baseball rating service that the Met farm system is rated number 5. The Binghamton Rumble Ponies are 71-34, which I believe is the best minor league baseball season since the 92-93 Harrison Senators. And number 3 for Stearns' detractors, whose baseball team building philosophies to the 73-44 juggernaut Brewers used to build their consistent, sustainable winner. Nonetheless, I make this call to action for Stearns and his front office compadres because I think their starting rotation, other than David Peterson, has betrayed them. There may be perfectly valid reasons such slow returns to rotations by starters that miss significant time to injuries, the running out of gas by a converted reliever, and some rational pitching choice gambles gone awry, but reasons are irrelevant. We are where we are. Like in 2024, David Stearns needs to act boldly when the situation calls for it. He should use Monday's off day to DFA Montas, Blackburn, and Stanek, and promote McClain, Sproat, and fireball reliever Dylan Ross. I personally would show I have a pair and promote McClain and Tong instead of McClain and Sproat, but don't expect most GMs other than possibly AJ Preller would be that bold. Thank you for reading. I hope you have a chance, and I hope the Mets do that. Let's go through your call to action. Yes, the kids need to be called up. Now, I don't know if it's DFAing Ryan Stanek necessarily. Ryan Stanek just needs to not be used in high leverage situations. That's the problem with Ryan Stanek. Like, not every team is going to have 8 relievers in which all of them are interchangeable and can pitch in big spots. So to me, it's more Hagenman is out because remember, Justin Hagenman is still on this roster. And even though he looks like a combination of Pete Hoffman and Jason Bay, doesn't mean he needs to be here. DFAing Frankie Montas, you could. I mean, you could just write the check and say this isn't working. I think that what you could simply do is move him to the bullpen as a long reliever, call up one of the 2 kids right now to take his spot in the rotation, and so Montas can maybe clean up messes in situations where games are out of reach and you don't have to waste relievers that you want to use in high leverage spots. That's one thing you could do. But I'm not opposed to your call of action, DFAing Ryan Stanek, DFAing Frankie Montas, and let the kids come up. Now, we have seen David Stearns make a change in which he's taken all of his top prospects from AA, including Carson Benj and Jett Williams and Jonah Tong and Ryan Clifford, and they've been promoted to AAA, which puts them all one step closer to possibly contributing to the big club. I don't think any of them will be up here this year, especially because I think McClain and Sproat are obviously closer. But I'm with you, and I would have done this last week with at least one of them coming up, specifically Nolan McClain, would have been the guy. And I would have pushed David Peterson back a day. I would have done all sorts of things. Now, they've got 6 games coming up around off days. The homestand against Atlanta and Seattle. They may not do it then, but for the 16-game stretch they have coming up after that, I fully expect that they will, and David Stearns will. Benji says, Francisco Lindor is the biggest issue. This is obviously a miserable stretch. It's hard to watch, and everyone to an extent is to blame. But what I like to do is discuss who or what is the biggest culprit, and that is clearly Francisco Lindor. He has not been getting on nearly enough. or he has not been getting nearly enough airwaves for how putrid he has been this year. And what's crazy is that it's his defense too. Soto has the big contract and the big expectations and the what has he done for me question working against him. But overall, while he's below career marks, he has had a very good statistical year. Do we want more? Of course, but let's stop acting as if it's the biggest issue. Lindor has a 726 OPS. Lindor hasn't finished nearly to what he's capable of. Lindor is supposed to be the leader of the team, and yet he gets a third of the airtime for this mess. $340 million is no joke. I think we all know Lindor has contributed big time to this. I mean, we could get this out of the way now. He's the net negative from this series. Not only was he offensively completely inept this entire series, going a combined 0-for-12 with 6 strikeouts, which is just insane to think about. That in its own right would be the net negative. But the other thing was the error he committed in the second inning of Game 2 on Saturday night was not only an egregious error, not only an error that Francisco Lindor cannot make, it was an error that changed the entire game. They go to Frankie Montas after the scoreless inning from Reed Garrett, and this is where we transition into talking about Saturday's game. I'll get back to your emails, and yes, we'll figure out a Rico, I'm the man now, star of the series. But Reed Garrett gives him a scoreless first inning. They get a run from Pete Alonso on the record-tying home run. It's 1-0. They go to Montas, who was not great. He comes into the game, gives up back-to-back hits. Worst of all, he's walking Anthony Siegler to load the bases up. So Frankie's all over the place. But Frankie got out of the inning. He did. He made a big pitch against Joey Ortiz, that pain in the ass, which unfortunately no one else was able to do in this series. Wasn't able to be done by Sean Manaea. Wasn't able to be done by Ryan Helsley. But Frankie Montas got Joey Ortiz out, and that was a long at-bat too. He got him to hit a ground ball to shortstop, and Francisco Lindor, who I get it, he's a mess offensively, and maybe he's not 100%, or maybe he's just streaky like he always is, but you got to make that play. That play changed the entire game. Turns a 1-0 game into a 2-1 game. And even though Starling Marte responded the very next inning by hitting a solo home run to tie it, and they took the lead in the fourth inning on the RBI hit by Cedric Mullins, and Juan Soto added another with a home run in the fifth inning, I mean, that is a monstrous error by Francisco Lindor. So when you combine the 0-for-12 with the fact that he also came up in how many big opportunities, it wasn't just 0-for-12. You go back to the second inning of Saturday night's game. Alonso hits the home run, great. They load the bases up with two outs for Lindor. Cedric Mullins is drawing a walk. Alvarez is getting hit. The bottom of the order is contributing to set up Francisco Lindor in this huge spot to, I don't say break the game open, but at least give them a cushion. And he strikes out looking. He comes up in the fourth inning after Mullins comes through with the RBI bloop hit. They have first and third with one out in the fourth inning, leading 3-2. Another spot for Lindor to, again, not break the game open, but give them a comfortable lead. And he grounds in with double play on the first pitch. So it wasn't just 0-for-12, 6 strikeouts, which is bad. It was 0-for-12, 6 strikeouts, leaving countries on base and a horrific defensive play. Could you imagine? I want everybody to think about something crazy for a second. Do you remember those rumors? The rumors that they were going to name Francisco Lindor captain in the middle of the David Wright retirement ceremony, those wacky, wacky rumors. Could you imagine if they had done that? Could you imagine? Imagine they give him the C at the end of David Wright's big shindig. And let's not forget, yeah, they would go on and win 7 in a row after they lost that game. But think about what Lindor has done really in the second half of the year, what he's done during this losing streak, how bad he's been. You imagine him running around with that C on his chest? Oh, my God. The resentment would be through the roof. The reason why Lindor doesn't get a lot of crap is because of how good he was last year. I mean, how clutch he was last year, the memories he gave us last year. That isn't going to last forever. But in terms of, well, why is Francisco Lindor not taking the heat that Juan Soto's taking, or taking the heat that the starting pitching's taking, or taking the heat even that Brandon Nimmo's taking. Because Lindor, I think, earned so much capital off of what he did last year. But there's no sugarcoating how bad he's been. And it's important for Francisco Lindor to contribute. Now, let me get back to Montas. Frankie Montas wasn't bad per se. He was just painstakingly awful to watch. He threw a million pitches. He worked himself into tons of trouble to where they only got three innings out of him. And again, isn't that the problem with this team? They use an opener to try to eat into it. But the problem with using the opener is that you used one of your key relievers in the first inning. So what happens in the seventh inning when you're trying to protect the lead? What happens? What happens when, well, I've already used Tyler Rogers. Crap. I've already used Gregory Soto. Brooks Raley's not available. At least that's what Mendy tells us. I got Helsley and I got Diaz, but I'm probably only going for an inning from each of those guys. So I used Reed Garrett. He'd be the guy, but I used him in the first inning as an opener. Where do I go? And that's what leads us to Ryan Stanek. What leads us to Ryan Stanek was the fact that because you used an opener and then you only got three innings out of that stiff Montas, your bullpen was left in a soft spot. Where here's the guy that should not be used in a high leverage situation being used in a high leverage situation, a one run lead. And it didn't matter that it was the bottom of the order. Now, let's first guess this brilliant manager. So I've already said my issue with Sunday's game was Edwin Diaz needed to enter this game with a lead. I would have gone to him two batters earlier than Mendy did. So let's go to the seventh inning. What would I have done differently? The first thing I would have done differently is I wouldn't have gone to Ryan Stanek. I would have gone right to Ryan Helsley. Now, hear me out. Well, what am I thinking? How am I getting nine outs if I'm going to Helsley in the seventh, especially with the bottom of the order coming up? Ryan Helsley and Edwin Diaz, both closers, are each capable of getting a four-out save. Dare I say a five-out save? Well, if one gets four outs and the next guy gets five outs, you know how many outs that adds up to? That'd be nine. I would have tried to win this game. And again, think about this. They had an off day Thursday. They have an off day Monday. So for anyone like, come on, Evan, this is unrealistic. The 162, you can't manage that way. Yeah, you can. You can manage that way when you have off days all around you. You can manage that way when you're in the middle of a long losing streak. You can manage that way when, yeah, you're a little desperate because you used a freaking opener ahead of that stiff Frankie Montas who still only gave you three innings. So, yeah, you can be aggressive. I'm not being irrational. But if you're going to go to Ryan Stanek to start the seventh inning with a one-run lead, and we all know the three-batter minimum, if two of the three batters get base hits against him, and now the top of the order is up, on what planet is Stanek facing that guy? Again, Mendy went one batter too long. Ryan Helsley failed, just like Edwin Diaz failed on Sunday. They may have failed anyway. And the way the Mets are playing, even if I got what I wanted, those key relievers may have failed. I acknowledge that. Nothing guarantees a win. But I just got to walk myself through how this makes any sense. How Ryan Stanek, who has not been good all year, has been very inconsistent, would probably be the best way to describe him. He is facing 7, 8, and 9 of the batting order. And let's go through what they did against him. Turan got a hit. Caleb Durbin pinch hit for him. Hit a rocket line drive that was caught by Lindor. It was a line drive. I think it was 100 miles.
Possibility means you have a chance. passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress,
to visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes, and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Miles an hour off the bat. Then he gives up the double to Joey Ortiz. It was a blooper, but it was a double. Ground rule double. So three batters, two hits, and a line drive. How's he in the game? How's he in the game? And even though he got Frelick out, he got him to make soft contact to Lindor. The run scored. The game was tied. And we knew the game was over once the game was tied. Because what does the Met offense do in the last four innings of games? Anyone want to raise their hand? Nothing. From the sixth inning on in this series, so that would be a combined 12 innings of baseball. The sixth inning on in game one, the sixth inning on in game two, the sixth inning on in game three. You know how many runs they scored? Zero. Zero. Like I said earlier, some will say that makes them heartless and gutless. Mendy has said this team makes no adjustments. Whatever the reason is, not scoring runs in the last four innings of games, not good. But I hated the fact that Mendy stuck with Stanek to face Frelick. Then he goes to Ryan Helsley, and what does he do? He gets ahead of Isaac Collins. Collins hits a ground ball to third base, and Ronnie Mauricio can't make the play. And Ronnie Mauricio had come in for defense, replacing Mark Vientos. Let's get to that. I got no problem with that. That may blow your minds. I'm not going to rip Mendy for that. Mark Vientos is not a stiff at third base. That's probably too strong. But he's not as good as Mauricio and Beatty. Now, here's where I would quibble. And I went to Baseball Savant to just see what the data says, even though I believe the data lies like 80% of the time when it comes to defensive metrics. I think that Beatty overall has played a better third base than Mauricio, but I'm not like fully confident when I say it. You know what I mean? Like, that's what my eyes tell me, but my eyes may be biased. They may be biased because Beatty's played a lot more. Beatty's also played a lot of second base. Beatty also had that like stretch earlier this season where he was making every play at third base. And Ronnie Mauricio, I've seen him play third base. It just feels like I've seen so much more of Brett Beatty. So I admit, my gut reaction is, I think Beatty's a little bit better defensively. The defensive metrics disagree with me. Not that Beatty's been bad, just that Mauricio's been better. Okay. So I'm not going to quibble. You know, I'm going to trust Carlos Mendoza on who he feels more comfortable defensively at third base. So this isn't about Mauricio versus Beatty. This is just about, can you make a goddamn play? That's what it's about. There's a ground ball to third base. Make the play. Make the freaking play. And I was so pissed off it was called a base hit and not an error. I wrote that in my book, base hit, because I don't want to lie. And I wrote question mark E5. Let me give you a little Evan Roberts scorebook code. When I put question mark E, that is code for me calling the official scorer an idiot. Because it's an error. And he should have made the play. And then you get the sequence that, honestly, you have to laugh at. You just have to laugh or you're going to cry. And that's when Helsley gets the last out of the inning. Okay, they're going to be down by a run in the eighth inning. We'll see if they can pull a comeback. Contreras hits a fly ball to Juan Soto. But no. Pitch clock violation. And what's so hilarious about that is the day before we saw the E2 catcher's interference on a play that was supposed to be an out. Remember that one? When Sal Frelick hit a ground ball to second base, it's supposed to be an out. And it's like, oh, hold on. Catcher's interference. And what does that lead to? Them losing. Because two batters later, that's when Collins got hit by the pitch. That was the difference in the game. LD offense is not allowed to score runs from the sixth inning on. Mets lose. So when I see, oh, God, pitch clock violation, I start chuckling. And I start thinking, all right, how is he going to stick it up our ass? How's this going to go? And on the next pitch, he hits a bomb. I mean, you have to laugh. If you don't laugh, this whole thing is depressing. And it is depressing. I mean, we're the idiots investing money and time watching this. And here we are in August watching the team sink like the Titanic. But you can't make that up. A pitch clock violation wipes out a fly ball to right field. And instead, Contreras hits a home run. And then, of course, the Met bats were just like, let's go home. The funniest was, so that happens. It's now a three-run game. A three-run game feels like a 10-run game. Eighth inning, all right, down by three. They got six outs. Nimmo, Mauricio, and McNeil strike out back to back to back. And that's when I really started questioning what I was doing with my life. That was the moment where it's like, wow, okay. So Saturday was bad. And you know the best part? I didn't even mention that Pete Alonso tied Daryl Strawberry on the all-time home run list. He finally got there with the solo home run to start the second inning that gave them a 1-0 lead. Very cool moment. Excited for Pete. And that's not necessarily his fault. It's everybody's fault. And so the Mets go out and they score four runs, three of them on solo home runs. A little blue pit by Cedric Mullins, and after a home run by Juan Soto in the fifth inning, the Mets record one base hit the rest of the game. And that is a very common occurrence because in Sunday's game, after they scored all those runs early, here are the final four innings of Sunday's game. I'll do each one for you just so you can really hear how LD this offense can be late in games. We'll go backwards, right? Sunday's game. The more recent one. Sixth inning, 1-2-3. Seventh inning, one out walk to Nimmo, Alonzo McNeil fly out. Eighth inning, 1-2-3. Ninth inning, two out walk to Soto, Nimmo flies out. So in the final four innings on Sunday, zero base hits, two base runners, zero at-bats with runners in scoring position. Ooh, you ready for Sunday? On Sunday in the sixth inning, they got a two-out base runner on a strikeout wild pitch. Next batter, Cedric Mullins, grounds out. Seventh inning, one-out walk to Soto. Marte pops up. Alonzo grounds out. Eighth inning, 1-2-3, strikeout the side. Ninth inning, down by three. One-out single by Mullins. Strikeout, strikeout. They did get a runner in scoring position. That occurred on a defensive indifference. Friday night, another great performance by the offense late. Sixth inning, 1-2-3. Seventh inning, 1-2-3. Eighth inning, two out walk by Lindor. Soto grounds out on the first pitch. And then obviously they did have the rally in the ninth with the double with two outs. And then McNeil's base hit, guy thrown out at the plate. That's what they did in the last four innings of Friday's game, Saturday's game, and Sunday's game. And Sunday's game, and really Friday's game, I think both go on that list for worst losses of the season as they continue to pile up. But I do have good news. If you head out to Citi Field this week to watch them try to beat the Braves or try to beat the Mariners, you could celebrate your highlights with Mio Sparkling Sake. It's a true crowd pleaser, light, bubbly, and easy to enjoy. Whether you're at Citi Field or maybe it's your favorite spot, ask for Mio Sparkling Sake by name, a new tradition served chilled, imported from Japan. It's the official sake of Rico Bronya. Enjoy responsibly. We got to do it. We're contractually obligated. We're actually not. It's my own contract in my head that we need to pick a Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series. And these aren't easy when the team continues to lose. They got swept by the Guardians. By default, I gave it to Reed Garrett. I did receive a few emails of people saying it should have been Pete Alonso for what he did in the first game of the series. Considered it. But he also struck out with the bases loaded and one out with a chance to win the game and then to do anything the rest of the series. When they lost two out of three to the Giants, it feels like an eternity ago. Believe it or not, Francisco Lindor won that award. And when they got swept by San Diego, it was Mark Vientos. I got to tell you, and I know that some people may not like me saying this, my gut is it's Juan Soto. And Juan is going to take a lot of heat. He takes heat from me, Juan Solo, which I continue to say because he does hit a lot of solo home runs. But what I made clear the other day in talking about that is sometimes solo home runs are good. In fact, they're always good because you hit a home run and you drove in a run. And with this offense, I'll take whatever I can get. Look, he hit a home run to start this series, which we're going to hope would set the tone. It gave him a 1-0 lead. Like, I'm not throwing that back. When he hit the solo home run in the fifth inning, remember, the game had just been tied at 3. And he hits a home run that gave them the lead that they took into the seventh inning. So when I call him solo, I'm not mad when he hits solo home runs. It's more the fact that he hasn't had those huge moments. He hasn't had the 3-run home run yet this season or the grand slam this season. And by the way, this whole thing has become so obvious. Now, there are a lot of people who just rip you off. Like, they'll hear something and then they'll create it like their own. The most genuine person in the world who would never do that is the great Joe Beningo, my longtime partner. Because Joe doesn't listen to the fan very often. He doesn't watch, like, he doesn't do much. He watches the games. He's not, like, consuming social media. He's the opposite of that. And here's how I know, because I work with Joe for so long, that we think alike sometimes. I started to think like him. Sometimes I think he thinks like me. I'm not even kidding you. I'm listening to his Saturday show because I love Joe. And in the opening monologue, he said, you know what, this Juan Soto, all he does is it's solo home runs. I was thinking about this the other day. We should call him Juan Solo. And there's no way he was listening to the Rico or listening to me repeat that on Evan and Tiki. That is legitimately, we just think alike now. He thinks like the emailer who created it. He thinks like me, who's been jotting down all the solo home runs he's hit. So the Juan Solo moniker is thriving. But in fairness to Juan Solo, he got on base in every game in this series. He was 4-for-12. I think he got on base 6 or 7 times. He hit 2 home runs. He stole a base. Like, if I'm picking somebody to be the star of the series, I think Jeff McNeil is a good candidate. I think Starling Marte, though he did not play in the third game, which I kind of have a problem with there, Mendy. I mean, this freaking guy hits a home run in game 1, a home run in game 2. Can't play him in game 3. Can't do that. I didn't love that. That's another issue with Mendy. But, I mean, Starling Marte went 3-for-8 with 2 home runs. Jeff McNeil went 4-for-11 with what could have been a second RBI and a clutch RBI, but, of course, Marte got thrown out at the plate. But in my opinion, and I may get some backlash for this, I think Soto had a good series. As much as we kill him for the lack of clutch moments, on base a lot, a couple of home runs. They got swept, so you'd rather win this award during good times. But I think the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series is indeed Juan Soto.
Well, I have two things that you're going to be very upset with. First of all, I'm going to hate to break this news, but somebody tweeted or Instagrammed me a photo back from the Washington Nationals. Juan Solo.
Yeah, but that was for
Star Wars Day.
Yeah, it was for Star Wars. That doesn't count.
Well, I fine. That's fine. I give. You're doing it because of Solo home runs. They did it because of what was his name? Han Solo. Han Solo.
Han Solo. Yes.
Han Solo. But hey, listen. There's a bobblehead out there with his name on it. Anyway, serious note. You're missing it. It's Tyler Rogers, and I'm not going to sit here and say that. Hey, dude, like he shaved any games, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But he was in every single game. He didn't allow a run. He actually did his freaking job on like half this other team. I think he could be definitely get that award this week.
That's, you know what? That's a good one. That's a good one. This is one of those rare times where you may convince me. You may make me move on this because, and it's not a knock on Juan because, look, we all want him to come up with the bases loaded and clear the bases with a double. We all want him to hit a three-run home run. I am not holding solo home runs against him because solo home runs, like I said, can be good. Like in these cases here, the two solo home runs he hit in this series were pretty important. I know it turned out to not matter because the Mets found ways to lose, but a home run to give him a 1-0 lead, a home run to give him a 4-3 lead or a 3-2 lead, whatever it was. Like he gave them leads with those home runs. But I think you're right about Tyler Rogers. I think you're going to convince me because it is rare to have a reliever impact all three games. You know, we just don't see it. Tyler Rogers has a rubber arm. It wasn't easy. He got the huge double play. But you're right. Three scoreless innings from Tyler Rogers. I think you got me, Hoff. I think it's Tyler over Juan Soto. Sorry, Juan.
And not even a strikeout. Think about that. Three innings pitched, zero strikeouts.
That's the risk of a pitcher like him, though, because go back to the Cleveland game. I'm trying to get all these losses straight, and when he got the loss, it was soft contact. But that's the problem. That's why these general managers and scouts want strikeout pitchers, because there's less variables when you strike a guy out. Strike a guy out, he's out, you know, unless it gets past the catcher. You know what I mean? But when you get soft contact, it could bounce in, and you could lose the game. Which is obviously what happened to Tyler Rogers last week against Cleveland. But I think you're right. I also think because he had to pitch in every single game, which is such a rarity. Congratulations, Tyler Rogers. You are the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series. And you agree Lindor is the net negative. He has to be. I mean,
I mean, we can try to finagle somebody else. I mean, but it's not worth it. You just give it to Lindor. I mean, who else was offensively? Well, you know what?
Marte, McNeil, Soto, yeah. I think are fine as far as positives. You're talking about negatives? Brandon Nimmo. I mean, Brandon Nimmo was a freaking walking strikeout.
Yeah, he was pretty bad. Someone said that I was going to put Beatty in that list of net negative. No, he went 1-for-4. He did his job. He hit a home run. But I'm not going to start him every day. The guy's streakier than you know, my pants at times. No, I don't know what that means. I was going with him a rash stroke. It fell flat. Hey, listen, sometimes it happens, and we're all human beings. Marte would be the only other guy that maybe I'd throw in there as a star of the series. But again, like him getting thrown out at home, you can't do it.
You know what I like about your Tyler Rogers pick? The Met bullpen is so overly relied upon that, you know, every single day they have to go to this bullpen early. I mean, think about it. 4 1/3 innings out of Kodai Senga. I know 1 inning out of Reed Garrett, but it's really 3 innings out of Frankie Montas because he was supposed to be the bulk guy. And then 4 innings out of Manaea. Like every game they're asking for so much from the bullpen. And rarely will you see this manager, or really any manager, ask a reliever to pitch on back-to-back-to-back days. And Rogers was able to do it and did it effectively. Here's where things have to change. And we could say they have to change Tuesday against Atlanta, but that's not true because, again, the Mets have an off day on Monday. And so the Mets have that ability to work around off days to refresh their bullpen. Like Tyler Rogers could very well pitch on Tuesday. It would be his fourth straight game or fifth straight game pitching, something absurd. because they have off days, though, they're kind of pitching around it. You know what I'm saying? But once they have that stretch of games that begins real soon, where they play 16 straight days, they have to get innings from their starting pitching. They just have to. They can't get 5 innings out of their bullpen every night without an off day. Because as you see, you just run low on guys, and it will be ugly. It already is ugly, but it would be even uglier.
So I have a question for you, and it's not trying to say that David Stearns is a big idiot, but going into the season right now where we're at, for example, there was a guy, Jose Quintana, who was available, and they rushed to sign Frankie Montas for 2 years, give him an option, but Quintana was available. Basically better than Frankie Montas, hands down. You think that David Stern sometimes is just trying to I don't want to say read too much and try to overanalyze everything, but you think he's trying to be too smart at times?
The Montas thing is, no one liked the Frankie Montas signing. And I think the way we rationalized it upon the signing was, well, Stern's had a great year last year. The pitching lab, we'll see. And unfortunately, this is one of those cases where the fans are right, where Frankie Montas has been a disaster. Now, David Stern showed us last year with Adrian Hauser, he'll pull the plug quickly. Now, to a degree, they pulled the plug by not starting him on Saturday and just making him a bulk guy. I gotta believe that if it's not next week, it'll be the week after. Not that they'll DFA him necessarily, but they have to replace him. Like, 3 innings, and I know it was only one earned run because of the error by Lindor, but that's not acceptable. You threw a million pitches in those 72 pitches in 3 innings. It can't happen. But you win some and you lose some. And right now, it is looking like a big fat L on signing Frankie Montas. Now, let's get to some more of your complaining emails to ricob@gmail.com. Richard writes, swept in Milwaukee. First time emailer, long time listener. I listened to episodes 527 and 528 back-to-back this morning while walking the dog. Aside from ruining my Sunday morning walk, 3 things stuck to me. Number one, not pinch-running Tyrone Taylor for Starling Marte was borderline manager malpractice. You guys covered this in full. Number two, Mendy dismissing the idea out of hand of potentially leading off Juan Soto, also borderline on malpractice. I hated the idea going into the offseason. Now I see many benefits. High on base, plethora of solo home runs, stealing some bases, and struggling with runners in scoring position anyway. Before you continue, I want to address the Soto leading off thing, which I've been a big fan of. It's something I brought up to Carlos. It is something I've talked a lot about here on the Rico Bronya. I'm a big fan of leading off Juan Soto. Is it possible that the reason Mendy is not interested in doing it, the reason that he hasn't done it, is that he's talked to Juan Soto? And maybe Juan Soto is dead set against it. Is that not possible? Because nothing else makes sense. You got a guy that gets on base a ton of the time, a guy who, for whatever reason, is putting up great numbers with nobody on base, a guy who is now stealing bases. Why not? I mean, this team needs to score runs. Get them up as often as possible, which obviously occurs when you lead off. Put guys on base for Francisco Lindor. In fact, I'll tell you another reason why it makes so much sense. Lindor is loving laying down bunts lately. He's loving it. And since he's slumping, I can't hate it. If Juan Soto is going to lead off games with walks, fine. Lay down your stupid bunt. Now you got a runner on second, one out. Let's go. Pete Alonso coming up. Brandon Nimmo coming up. Let's cook. So I'm just thinking that maybe this is something Juan is not into. Number three, Sunday's home run notwithstanding, Cedric Mullins is not the upgrade we needed in center field. If Vientos was the holdup in the trade to acquire Robert, we should have pulled the trigger. This was also a potential move that I hated earlier in the season, but I've come around to the other side. I can't tune in live. End of series, Rico. I've had enough for today. Well, hopefully this doesn't ruin your Monday trip to work. My apologies. David writes, Mendoza is soft. Oh, okay. Evan, something interesting happened today. I've been with my wife for 12 years, married for 7, and over the last 3 to 4 years, my wife has started to take an interest in the Mets alongside my fandom. She's no expert yet, but she has a clue. During the game today, the camera panned to Pat Murphy, and my wife says, wow, he looks like he's hard-nosed, no-nonsense kind of guy. I chuckled and said, yeah, that's why the Brewers are so scrappy and the best team in baseball right now. I then asked her what she thinks when she sees Mendoza, and she said, he looks laid back, very relaxed and weak, which is funny because that's exactly how the Mets have looked for too long. Now, if you recall, Keith and Steve were talking about the Brewers being scrappy, and Keith Hernandez said, quote, it starts with the manager. What my wife observed and what Keith said is exactly the problem with this team. There's no scrap, no getting down and dirty, no fiery postgames from Mendy. Hell, hardly any passion from Mendoza at all. And the players follow suit. Mendoza is not a leader. Mendoza is not the guy to manage this team to the promised land. The team has no balls, no killer instinct. That stems from leadership. The organization needs to seriously look in the mirror and call itself out for being too weak and then make the necessary changes for the future. Otherwise, they're going to continue to fail. Dave, let me return this comment with a question. Do you think the Met players are scrappy? You know, the Brewers are a scrappy team, and right now, they're the best team in baseball. And if you believe in sample sizes, like the sample size that says the Mets have sucked for 2 months, well, the sample size of the entire season, and certainly the last 2 months, tell you the Brewers are the best team in baseball. They're scrappy, though. Look at their team. Sal Frelick, Isaac Collins, Blake Perkins, Bryce Terang, Joey Ortiz. I mean, that's who they are. So I'm all for giving Pat Murphy a lot of credit. The guy won manager of the year last year, much to the chagrin of us. Remember the whole Pat Murphy versus Carlos Mendoza controversy on who should be manager of the year? But I think a lot of this is about the players. Is Juan Soto a scrappy player? Is Francisco Lindor a scrappy player? Is Pete Alonso, Mark Vientos, Jeff Big? I mean, go down the list and answer that yourself. Like, think about it. Is it the manager or is it the roster? Jack writes, the Mets need to do shrooms. I still believe this team is talented. All the right pieces are there. They're just one good shrooms trip away from unlocking it. And tomorrow's an off day. Bring back the spirit of 86. Hey, why not? I mean, we tried a dopey theme song for the Rico Bronya today. Brian Alonzo writes, dear Evan, I was just wondering why is David Stearns not being hands with this team now compared to last year? I guess he means DFAing somebody, being active the way they got rid of players last year, like Joey Wendell and Adrian Hauser. Who? I guess would be the question. You know, I know you loved that last year too, but who specifically? I mean, we've heard about Frankie Montas as a guy. That's a huge investment to just cut loose on. But is there anyone else that you would want to see him axe and that would make you feel good?
No, I mean, he constantly has been like, you know, going through the bullpen for the longest time. So there really wasn't anybody they could quote unquote axe. They DFA'd everybody like three or four times already. You know, and then they bring him back offensively. Here's the big stickler here. The big thing is they have had at least four young kids here at one point in time between, I guess you could even say five, Alvarez, Beatty, Mauricio, Vientos, and Luis Angel Acuña. Five guys. Those are young guys. You're not DFAing them. You're maybe trading them, but you're not DFAing them. So those are the guys who are in the rotation. You're not getting the Joey Wendells. You're not getting the, Zach Scott? Was that who it was?
Zach Short.
Short. There you go. Well, one or the other. But you didn't
Zach
even have
Scott was their general manager for 5 minutes.
No, we had him in studio the other day, actually.
that's who you're thinking of?
Hey, he gave us a lot of good stuff. A lot of good stuff. But I will say this much. That's the reason why they're not hands-on in DFAing people. What are they going to do, DFA Tyrone Taylor, who's your center fielder?
No. It doesn't make sense. Last year was built that way. Spencer writes, I'm sad. The net negative was Brandon Nimmo, and I'm the star of the series for watching these games. I agree. I think if you watched every game of this series, you are the star of the series. You won. Tom writes, losers. Evan, what about bringing up both kids, let them start, and follow them up with Manaea and Senga? Less taxing on the pen. Sadly, I think Sean is nothing more than a relief pitcher this year. It also looks like Helsley is one of those players that can't play in New York. That's the third game he's blown. Yeah.
No, I don't know, I'm not going to say that about Helsley just off the bat. Let's be serious. Let's go through every single game he's been part of. There's been a little bit of a funkiness to every single game. I mean, listen, last game specifically, on Saturday's game, that was ridiculous. Let's be honest. Should have been an error. And then
I agree with the funkiness, but not Sunday. Not game three of this series. He came in and he blew the game.
Well, that's okay. Fine. I'll give you one.
I don't think he can handle New York. I don't jump to that conclusion that quickly. I mean, he's a relief pitcher. We all know what can happen sometimes with relievers. I agree with the funkiness of some of these games, but Sunday he flat out blew. Let's just call it like it is. He came in the eighth inning with a one run lead and he blew the lead.
And to be fair, he came in when they traded for him. This was a higher whip than normal. He came in with a whip when traded to the Mets with a 1.39 whip. That's a lot of base runners. He's put on a lot of traffic. So mistakes happen, and eventually those people are going to score. So he hasn't been lights out like he has been in previous years.
Yeah. No, I get you. We've got like hundreds of more emails. We could be here all day. A lot of people are pissed off. You want to hear this one? I'll read this one. I'm heated. That's what he wrote. Not me. He's heated. JP writes, Evan, longtime Rico listener, first time participant. I need to rant because I'm pissed off. And the I need to rant because I'm pissed off is all in capital letters. This team's anti-clutch gene is unfathomable. What an underperforming group of individuals. This piss poor performance and overall inconsistent play throughout the 2025 season would not be acceptable if this was a $150 million roster. This team is built to win now, but it looks like they want to play golf in October. This team has so many problems, I don't know where to start. I'll start with an ugly truth, which I wish was not true. This team is going nowhere with overpaid Brandon Nimmo hitting third. Why is Brandon Nimmo hitting third? He's not hitting. And on top of that, he has no arm in left field and diminished bat speed. I love Brandon, but this is a bad contract that is going to get worse. Nimmo is now and future problem for this team. Next, the rotation of Mauricio Beatty and Vientos is not benefiting any of them with the inconsistent playing time. One of them needs to play every day, and I don't care who they pick. Personally, I think Vientos should be batting second in this lineup and either DHing or playing third just like last year. I don't care if his defense is worse than Mauricio or Beatty, who are just so susceptible to botching defensive plays in clutch situations. I will conclude with the deserved criticism of David Stearns, who made half-ass win-now moves. Yes, he upgraded the bullpen significantly by trading for legitimate arms on expiring contracts, but why would you do that if your lineup addition was Cedric Mullins, who is mid at best? Stearns failed to provide the offense with the firepower it needs and missed an opportunity to resolve the over-cluttered infield situation by trading some combination of Mauricio Beatty-Vientos. But Stearns' biggest mistake was failing to secure a top-end starting pitcher. This is inexcusable. This is a win-now team in their prime and a possible lockout after 2026. Pete Alonso may not be here next year. What are we doing?
Who signed that? Who emailed that? Was that me?
That sounds like you. There was a lot of movement in that email.
I know.
That was from JP.
All right.
Yeah, that's JP. Yeah, I mean, the Nimmo bashing, the trade deadline stuff. Look, I go back to the trade deadline. Who did you want? Who did you want? Like, I heard Beningo saying Charlie Morton. I don't think Charlie Morton's any good. I mean, he's 100 years old. Like, I think the next rotation spot is being taken by Nolan McLean and by Brandon Sproat. I think they're going to be here soon, and they're going to get an opportunity. I'd rather see them than Charlie Morton. There was no top-end guy moved. I mean, you want to go back 3 years ago and say they should have re-signed Jacob deGrom? I mean, you know I said that. Obviously, it wouldn't have benefited them in the first 2 years, and they also wouldn't have signed Justin Verlander, which means they wouldn't have traded for Drew Gilbert and Ryan Clifford, so I guess you could look at it that way. But I disagree about the deadline. Like, who was moved that you wanted?
Well,
I don't like Cedric Mullins either, or I don't want to say I don't like him. I didn't think he was that big of an upgrade. I made that very clear on our trade deadline, Rico, but who was traded? That was a huge upgrade.
Well, okay. See, that's the thing is, like, there were certain guys that weren't traded. I still would have looked at Arizona and said, how much for Zach Gallen? He's not re-signing. He's a free agent. What will it take to bring him in? Since the trade deadline, his two starts, he's gone six innings both times, allowed a combined three earned runs. You know, like why were I know he hasn't
wasn't traded, but he wasn't traded
because we didn't spend enough. Well, that's why. You know,
maybe
that.
Maybe not. We don't know. And the same thing with Luis Robert Jr. I don't know if Vientos would have been what made that deal happen. He wasn't traded. Either way, the Mets have an off day on Monday, which is great. Means they can't lose. Think about it this way. The Mets have won one game in the month of August. Since July 28th, they have won one freaking baseball game, and that was Saturday against the Giants. We have sat there watching so much baseball and have seen so much losing. And how many one-run games have they lost? Two of these games to Milwaukee, one-run losses. The middle game and the first game to Cleveland, one-run losses. The first game to San Francisco, one-run loss. And what began this whole thing was blowing a lead against the Padres a few weeks ago, one-run loss. So during this stretch, one, two, three, four, five, six one-run losses. And I guess the positive inside would say, well, hey, you win half of them, it ain't so bad. The problem is they're not winning half of them. And the problem is when you look at the standings right now, it's daunting. I mean, all year long, while they struggled and they were through this malaise, so were the Phillies. To a degree, so were the Cubs. And so the Mets, not that long ago, were right there for the best record in the National League. Now they're not. Now they're buried. They're buried behind Milwaukee. You can forget that. They're not catching the Brewers for the number one seed. The division feels sort of out of reach right now. They do have a lot of head-to-head games with the Phillies, so that's good. But what I always hate hearing about that is, do you think the Mets are winning all seven games? Like, if they won five out of seven, that would be great. That's three games that you've improved on. They're more than three games out right now. They're trailing San Diego now for the second wild card spot. Not that I care about the second wild card spot, because it doesn't matter. You got to play your series on the road either way. And obviously, the Reds are up their ass. A game and a half back with a series coming up against the Phillies. The Mets have three with Atlanta. It's going to be Clay Holmes against Spencer Strider. It's going to be David Peterson against Carlos Cookie Carrasco. They bet a pound Cookie. Oh, my God. And then Kodai Senga is going to wrap up the Braves series on Thursday against Bryce Elder. Then they've got three games against Seattle. It's weird. Two games at Citi Field. And then Sunday night will be the Little League game. So kind of cool that the Mets will be involved in that. But it's a home game that's not really a home game. It's sort of a home game. But they're going to play Sunday night on ESPN against the Mariners. And then they have an off day, and that's when that stretch begins, where they play every day through Labor Day. Every day, no off days. Three in Washington, three in Atlanta, three at home against the Phillies, four at home against Miami, and then three games in Detroit. And then when they have their off day, and who knew this would happen, the opening weekend of the NFL season will feature Mets-Reds, which all of a sudden, I mean, maybe the biggest series of the year, the way things are looking. Who saw that coming?
I have a question, because I'm being serious. It's not facetious or whatever, but you said Holmes, Peterson, Senga. Set the over-under for me as innings pitched by a starting pitcher that series.
Well, I would say Clay goes five, which could be five good innings or five bad innings. Who the hell knows? But I think it would be five. Obviously, David Peterson has been the innings guy, but I'd only say six. I don't think he's going to go eight. And then, look, I have faith in Kodai Senga. And, you know, Kodai Senga and Sean Manaea, not in this start, but in his previous start, have shown the signs that they're about to click, like the signs that they're very, very close. In Kodai Senga's last start, remember, he got off and pitched the first four innings scoreless. Like, it looked like he was going to give us six innings. I thought that. And then all of a sudden, it kind of went to crap on his own error. And then he issued that walk to Ortiz, which was a killer. And then the catcher's interference. And it got out of whack. So I thought Kodai was close in his last start to breaking through. So I'm going to be positive and say six from Kodai. I think he'll break the streak. So 17 innings from the starting pitchers in the three games against Atlanta. And you'd have to sign for that at this point, right?
I was going to set it at 14 and two thirds, but okay. At 17?
See, okay. I'm, after all this, I give you some positivity.
I'll tell you, listen, if that's the case, you're talking about you're not going to see Ryan Stanek. You're not going to see Justin Hagemann if he's still on the team. I don't even know if he's still on the roster right now. But you're going to look at Tyler Rogers. You're going to look at Ryan Helsley and Soto and Diaz, those four guys.
Let's hope. Let's hope. They need wins. And unfortunately, the Atlanta Braves have never made things easy, but the Mets need wins. The bad news is this has been a mediocre team for a long time. The bad news is this feels like a free fall. The bad news is this offense gets worse as the game goes on. The bad news is they are overtaxing their bullpen. The good news is it's baseball. That's the good news. The good news is in the modern baseball world we live in, make the playoffs. And anyone who says they're dead, even if they make the playoffs, where are they going? That doesn't make sense anymore. That's not a true sentence in 2025. Where are they going? I don't know. They could win a three-game series against the Dodgers because that's baseball and they get hot at the right time. So I don't believe in that. So just make the playoffs. Unfortunately, that's what I'm thinking on August 12th. Just make the playoffs. And that's why when the Phillies play the Reds this week, I have to root for the Phillies. I think we have no other choice. We do appreciate you listening and downloading. I apologize. We couldn't get to every angry email. We tried, but it was just so depressing. But you can email us, therico@gmail.com. therico@gmail.com. I'm going to do my part to get this team turned around. I plan on going to all three games against Atlanta. And maybe we'll do some drive homes, have some fun, and maybe be able to talk about wins. Because this team has had a miserable, miserable free-falling August. And one can only hope that this is rock bottom and this is the worst and it's only going to get better from here. The famous last words, right? Thank you very much for listening, downloading, and subscribing to another depressing Panic City edition of Rico Bronya.
Rico Bronya, let the chant begin. Rico Bronya, let's hear it again. Rico Bronya, this show's on fire. With Evan Roberts, we're taking it higher. Rico Bronya, whoa. Rico Bronya, yeah. Rico Bronya, let's go. Rico Bronya, let's run the show.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.